My name is Mike Selig, and this is KXRW's The Good Ship Earth, the show that examines the challenges we face and explores the opportunities we have to make life more peaceful and prosperous for everyone. This show is part two of Our Secret Weapon. The first part explored what meditation is and how it benefits the people who practice it. Part one can be heard on my show page along with all my shows at kxrw.fm/goodshipearth. This episode examines the scientific findings of how a small group of meditators can positively influence a larger population. Everything you'll hear in the next half hour has been thoroughly examined and verified. First, I want to share a clip from an NPR report by Rebecca Davis that illustrates the history of how scientific discoveries can sometimes be met with resistance, even attacked if they pose a challenge to the way things were thought to be.
This is the story of a man whose ideas could have saved a lot of lives and spared countless numbers of women and newborns feverish and agonizing deaths. You'll notice I said could have. The year was 1846, and our would-be hero was a Hungarian doctor named Ignaz Semmelweis. Now, Semmelweis was what you might call a man of his time. Justin Lessler is an assistant professor at Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. He says, in those days, doctors like Semmelweis were trained to approach medicine scientifically.
This is the start of the golden age of the physician scientist, where physicians were expected to have scientific training and some scientific understanding.
So doctors like Semmelweis were no longer thinking of illness as an imbalance caused by, say, bad air or evil spirits. They looked instead to anatomy. Autopsies became more common, and doctors got interested in numbers and collecting data. The young Dr. Semmelweis was no exception. When he showed up for his new job at Maternity Hospital in Vienna, he started collecting some data of his own. Semmelweis wanted to figure out, why are so many women in maternity wards dying from something called childbed fever?
Dr. Semmelweis used the scientific method to answer that question, why were women dying of childbed fever? After forming and testing many hypotheses, he came upon the one that proved to be correct. A word of caution to the squeamish, the example of disease transmission in childbirth is a bit graphic. Semmelweis had observed that doctors were often performing autopsies on cadavers before they delivered babies. He learned that particles from the cadavers were carried on the hands of doctors to their patients.
If Semmelweis's hypothesis was correct, getting rid of those cadaverous particles should cut down on the death rate from childbed fever. So he ordered his medical staff to start cleaning their hands and instruments, not just with soap, but with a chlorine solution. Chlorine, as we know today, is about the best disinfectant there is.
When he imposed this rule in his ward, the rate of childbed fever fell dramatically.
And you'd think everyone would be thrilled. Semmelweis had solved the problem. But they weren't thrilled. For one thing, doctors were upset because Semmelweis's hypothesis made it look like they were the ones giving childbed fever to the women.
Even though Dr. Semmelweis had proved that doctors were giving the disease to their patients, they rejected his findings out of fear and ignorance. It took years for doctors to adopt the practice of washing their hands before treating their patients. This is a prime example of how new scientific discoveries can be completely disregarded. For the next half hour, I'm trusting that you still approach life with a curiosity and have an understanding that we haven't learned all there is to know. Not by a long shot. Dr. John Haglund is a quantum physicist who conducted pioneering research at the European Center for Particle Physics, known as CERN Labs in Geneva, Switzerland. He's also worked at the Stanford Linear Accelerator in Menlo Park, California. He works now as a science and policy expert, educator, author, and leading proponent for peace. This is a clip from one of his many presentations about the effect of group meditation on the behavior of large populations. I'd like you to pay special attention to the scientific vigor that was used to verify the findings of the studies that Dr. Hagelin will talk about.
I'm going to show you very quickly some of the early research. This is the first study, and I won't go into it in great detail except to say that this experiment was performed in the Middle East during the peak of the Lebanon War in the early 1980s. It was hypothesized, based on many previous smaller experiments, that if enough people were collectively experiencing and stimulating this fundamental, powerful field of peace within, that there would be a radiated influence of peace that would affect the behavior of people throughout society. People would wake up in the morning and they'd decide, hey, I don't think I'm going to kill anybody today. What a novel thought. That, you know, with some expanded comprehension, a less narrowly cramped, narrowly self-centered, acutely stressed vision, that those desperate acts of terrorism simply don't really have a fertile field to fall on. So this chart shows a dotted line going up and down, which is the rise and fall on a daily basis of the number of people who were meditating as a group in Jerusalem, about 1,000 people on average, sometimes more, sometimes less. And the solid line represents progress towards peace in the war in neighboring Lebanon. And even before the benefit of statistical analysis, you can almost see from the raw data that progress towards peace, measured by reduced war deaths, reduced war injuries, reduced number of bombs, that progress towards peace goes up and down almost in lockstep with the number of people who were meditating as a group, radiating this influence of inner peace to become outer peace. When this was subject to mathematical analysis, the likelihood that this is simply due to some fluke, due to chance, is less than 1 part in 10,000. To be able to say something with this certainty that group meditation prevented war, that is a really remarkable finding. When this was published in the Yale University Journal of Conflict Resolution, it ignited a firestorm. First of all, it took 2 years to publish the paper because the editors reviewed it and reviewed it and reviewed it, and they said in the end, this paper is unassailable. This paper was performed at a standard of scientific rigor far beyond that required for publication in any journal. So they had to publish it, but they published it with a letter. And the letter in the journal said, the results of this experiment are so unexpected that 1,000 people could influence the behavior of 1,000,000, that they urged other scientists to go out and repeat the study. And that's exactly what happened over the next 2.25 years. 7 other scientific collaborations went out and repeated the study, training and assembling groups of meditators, practicing transcendental meditation. And in every one of these experiments during this 2.25-year period, there was a marked reduction in violence and war. 80% drop in war deaths and war-related injuries in comparison to all the other days during the 2.25 years where there were no meditating groups, when the situation grew slightly worse, as this chart shows, in comparison to 7 highly positive bars showing highly statistically significant progress towards peace in every single experiment. If you put these together, the likelihood that this reduction of war was, again, simply due to chance and not due to the meditating groups was less than 1 part in 10,000,000,000,000,000. There is far more evidence that group meditation can turn off war like a light switch than there is evidence that aspirin reduces headache pain, for example. It is a scientific fact.
Experiments like the relatively small group of meditators preventing war in Lebanon were also conducted to try and reduce violence in what's been called the murder capital of the world.
And the effects of group meditation on dissolving crime and social stress and social violence has been quite a big deal now in the industry for almost 40 years. And what these experiments show, this is an experiment I helped conduct, but I was one of 27 authors, and getting 27 independent scientists to agree on the wording of any document is a hell. But nevertheless, we gathered statistics on what was called the murder capital of the world back in 1983, Washington, D.C., where there were large groups of meditating experts from all over the world who came to lend their nervous systems to this experiment and collectively meditate, yogic meditation, transcending meditation, to experience together the ocean of pure awareness. And as had been seen 52 times before, mostly published as well, there was, at the time the numbers became significant, a highly statistically significant drop in the, not just the crime levels as defined by the FBI, Part 1 violent crime, but pretty much everything in the city transformed in the most amazing way. And I'll mention there's a tradition of this research which has become extremely strong by now, convincing, really even to any skeptic who's willing to actually read the paper, because there are plenty of skeptics like Galileo's that won't look through the telescope. But in any case, the correlation between the size of a meditating group in an area of conflict like the Middle East during the peak of the Lebanon War, just looking at the raw data, before any analysis has been applied, there's a correlation in progress towards peace that rises and falls fairly observably even in the raw data based on the size of the meditating group. And once you apply proper statistical analysis, and social science research is challenging, and I've really gained a bit of a respect for it, having gotten involved with it, this is a highly statistically significant effect. It amounts to an 80% drop in war deaths and war injuries in war-torn areas. And I should mention, when that was first published in the Yale Journal of Conflict Resolution, it created a firestorm. It took two years to publish, for one thing, but once the analysis had been reviewed anonymously, which is a painful process, believe me, and many, many suggestions were implemented, the results were unchanged. Nevertheless, the editor wrote a note saying, this article, the implications of it are so enormous, and frankly, the hypothesis so strange, that a few thousand meditating experts embedded in the center of conflict could calm, reduce the societal stress, and ease the violence is so unexpected, they pleaded for other groups to go out and to repeat the experiment, which seven other groups did over the next 2.25 years. And every intervention, every group produced a highly, highly statistically significant effect, which if you put them together, and there's a publication that analyzes all of these in an integrated way, the likelihood that this is a statistical fluke, that war and war deaths just stopped by accident during the days and weeks when the meditators were meditating, is tiny. It's tiny. But the point for today's discussion is, these are field effects of consciousness. Long-range societal effects of individuals embedded in society, and that is a paradigm-shattering fact. You cannot think of consciousness as purely the result of the neurological firings, the electrical impulses of the brain, because my firings don't affect yours at this distance. There has to be a deeper connection involved. And you won't find that connection at the classical level. This means that that consciousness is at least quantum mechanical, and if you really try to make this work and explain these experimental results, it's not easy. But the far more connectedness of us all at our core, reality, which is one. Ultimately, there's only one consciousness in this room. Yeah, and it is you, and it is you, but at that level, we are all one, and these experiments demonstrate it.
Dr. Haglund mentioned the field effects of consciousness. That may sound new to you, but there's been references throughout history that humanity shares one consciousness. From First Nation tribal lore to every spiritual text out there, there's been an implicit understanding that we are, on some levels, unified. The fact that science has advanced to the point where that theory can be tested and verified is revolutionary. But right now, some people might reject the fact that the unified field of consciousness is a reality. Just as doctors disregarded the importance of washing their hands during the time of Dr. Ignaz Semmelweis. After a short break, I'm going to play portions of my interview with the director of Portland TM, Michael Huddleston. We're going to talk about what the title Our Secret Weapon really means.
KXRW would like to thank Craft Cannabis, our exclusive cannabis sponsor, for supporting our radio community. Their wide variety of products range from edibles, pre-rolls, concentrates, vapes, CBD topicals, tinctures, and much more. Craft Cannabis now has two locations in Vancouver. The newest shop is on Andreessen Road, off of Patton Parkway, next to Home Depot. The Mill Plain location is located in the Heights Shopping Center. Customers 21 years of age and over can order online or in person. Both locations are open 8 a.m. to 11 p.m., 365 days a year. More information available at craftcannabis.com.
Community radio like this is brought to you by the generous support by our founding sponsors at ADCO Commercial Printing and Graphics, Clark County's local print shop since 1993. ADCO features stationery, posters, flyers, tickets, business cards, stickers, catalogs, and much more. Print on anything and mail anywhere. Learn more at ADCO1.com. That's ADCO1.com.
KXRW is a volunteer-powered, community-supported, 501c3 nonprofit organization. The COVID pandemic has prevented us from holding our usual live fundraising events. That's why your support right now is so important. Every donation helps us meet our monthly operational costs. Help us to continue to provide our purpose-driven local talk and music programming by joining KXRW today. You can go to kxrw.fm and click on our merch page for details on how to become a KXRW member. In this part of my interview with Michael Huddleston, we talk about what our secret weapon is and how we can use it.
This is my personal belief, and it's based on what I've learned about meditation, transcendental meditation, is that I feel this is our secret weapon to change the world for the better. And it's based on scientific research, both on the personal benefit side and on the societal benefit. When the square root of 1% practice transcendental meditation, crime rates go down. And since those scientifically verified, studied, you know, they study the study before they'll...
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and that's important. That's what's so beautiful about science. But they've studied the studies on the group effect of transcendental meditation. They say there is a change in the behavior of the people in that area. We're in a... To put things in context, we've gone through 5 years of what people would possibly qualify as some living hell in societal terms. A lot of conflict, a lot of bad news, a lot of anger, at least two sets of facts. There's scientific truth, there's truth, and then there's somebody else's version, and it can change from day to day. And
it pervades everything, politics, healthcare, every area.
Yes.
We look at, we can come up with different sets of statistics and different opinions, and it seems like opinion is all that matters anymore.
Opinion and volume and access. And there's a lot of money pushing the volume on some stuff that's very wrong. And this is where I think this is our secret weapon. It is the personal benefit derived from transcendental meditation that we can immediately feel better and more connected. And then as we grow in number, we disarm the people who will choose to lie and who will choose to try to spread fear and hate. There won't be a receptive host body for that virus.
I think that's it. Yeah, I think you've hit it right there. And it it is an interesting phenomenon. You know, the scientific research on TM itself and the Maharishi effect that you have mentioned is irrefutable. I mean, on a scientific basis, there's really no argument. It's there. But there's some other element. So why, if that's the case, it seems so obvious that we should be doing this because it costs almost nothing. So why aren't we doing it? And it goes to this, actually, to the phenomena itself. You know, you're mentioning this idea of secret weapon. And the secret weapon is ourselves. It's our own potential, our own pure. Everybody has access to that if they want to. And that's the source of the solution to all of our problems, is yourself. If you want a peaceful world, you start with peaceful individuals. So becoming a peaceful, more fulfilled, more enlightened individual, you're doing everything you can to create a peaceful world. So I actually mentioned this to people during the course and congratulate them that you're doing everything you can right now by practicing TM to create world peace. Now, it takes a certain number of people to change society, and that's kind of what you're up against. And this is where we talked a little bit earlier about government and politics. And, you know, the simple truth about government is that each country as a whole, you get the government you deserve. You know, this government, we talk about government as this foreign, separate thing. The government is exactly what we make it. It's an expression of who we are, and it changes constantly as we change. So it's something that can change and evolve. And we've seen this, you know, we've seen huge changes, and this really has to do with consciousness. So our government is exactly what we want it to be. Now, each individual might disagree completely with it, but it's a cumulative whole, the government that we have today. And the fact that it's gridlocked and not at all effective is a function of that conflict, that inner conflict we're having as a country. And that's what needs to be resolved. But these changes can take place almost instantaneously. And there are a number of examples of this. This happened in the Philippines after Marcos. There was this huge, sudden change in the government. Absolutely saw it in East Germany. And if people remember about the wall coming down was a result of this change that took place earlier. And it seemed to happen over a couple of days. Now, you might be old enough to remember this.
I do remember that.
It was a remarkable thing. And there was no violence involved. What happened was the people just decided, okay, we don't want to do this anymore. We want something different. And nothing could stop it. It happened instantly. And then the wall came down, the separation from the Soviet Union. Same is true of the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union came apart in a matter of days, and almost no violence at all. It was a change in the collective consciousness of the country. And so these changes are possible, but it does require this coherence. The whole group has to, but it's not the entire group that changes. This goes back to what we were saying, that the square root of 1%, that's all that's required if enough people make this change in their consciousness. It changes the direction of the entire country. And this is where the Maharishi effect comes into place. You know, we were talking about politics at one point, and this was one of the proposals of the Natural Law Party, is that we have a military in place. We have a defense department. We used to call it the War Department. Mm-hmm. And so the proposal was made, why don't we have a peace department? Why don't we actively pursue peace? And the proposal that was made was, well, we have soldiers, we have this huge army. Take a few who would like to practice this technique, train them. We already house them and feed them, so there's really almost no additional cost. And wherever there's a conflict in the world, you could send this group of peace-creating individuals as a group to that area. And this has been done over and over again. Lebanon was one of the best examples. they don't have to even go directly to the site of the conflict. They just need to be nearby. And it doesn't require the people who are involved in the conflict to practice TM. It can be a completely separate group outside, but the influence is so powerful that what they found in Lebanon is when the numbers were high enough, conflict completely stopped. Then when the group left, rose up again. And this has been shown over and over again. So this has all been documented, this reality. And as we talked about earlier, in a place like Washington, D.C., which at the time had the highest murder rate in the country, huge drop in violence, accidents. It just creates coherence within society. It happens spontaneously. It doesn't require everybody in the U.S. to practice TM. Just this tiny fraction, a square root of 1%, which really is just a few thousand people. So it's easily attainable. It's something that we could do. And the only thing that's required is that we as a group, or at least enough people, make the decision to do that. So the TM organization, Maharishi, this has always been a huge push for him, is trying to establish a group on his own. And, you know, it's very expensive proposition, but when the demonstrations have been done, they've been very effective. So it's just a question of who's going to subsidize this. Right. Is the government going to? And it would be a very easy thing for the government to do. And so this idea of the Department of Peace grew out of that, of just creating these groups. So it's a very simple idea.
I think for the cost of one F-35 fighter, we could have a Department of Peace put together.
Yeah, actually, it would be less than that. Yeah, I was involved in an organization when the war in Bosnia took place. And you might remember we actually lost a single airplane there. And when we looked at the cost of that, the cost of that single airplane was much more than it would have taken to organize a group, send a few thousand people there, and it would have quelled the conflict immediately. And even if, like I was saying earlier, even if there's a 10% chance of that working, why not take the chance?
Right.
So it's such a powerful technology. You know, and you got to look at it that way. It's technology. You know, we're working with consciousness, the most fundamental element of life. So the technology is there. You know, we know the answers. We have the technology. We have everything in place. And that's the secret weapon, is ourselves, tapping into our own unbounded potential.
I'd like to give a very special thanks to Michael Huddleston for his time and for his years of devotion in teaching thousands how to meditate. If you'd like to learn more about Portland TM, you can do a simple web search for Portland TM. TM isn't the only form of meditation, but many people have found that TM works best for them. Please don't let time or money be an obstacle to starting your meditation practice. You can start in your home for free. There's lots of resources on meditation out there for you. My name is Mike Selig with KXRW's The Good Ship Earth. In this time of strife and conflict, I'm inviting you to become an active part of that square root of 1% that will make life on this good ship Earth more peaceful and prosperous for everyone.